barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Tuesday, September 20th. It's Taco Tuesday, Chris. I hope everyone's going to have some fine Mexican cuisine today, as it is a LeBron James holiday. Taco Tuesday up in Menace to Sports. Chris, we should have got tacos for the show. That's on me. I got you next time. We'll get it catered.
You'll door dash it to me.
Yeah, I'll door dash it to you. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I have a fun game to play today. It is called QB Fun Facts, and we're going to get to that on the show. I want to talk about quarterback play on the national landscape through 3 weeks. And before we get to it, I'm going to preface it now. I'll probably preface it 100 times during the segment. I understand that through 3 weeks, that's not an adequate data set. Some teams like Michigan have played three of the worst teams in the country. Other teams have played ridiculous teams, right? So I understand that. We're just going to talk about it for conversation's sake, because that being said, there is still some glaring things. The other thing about it is I always set these research points that you have to have thrown a certain number of passes to even qualify, right? To say like, oh, who's the best QB under pressure? Well, there might be a quarterback like Cade McNamara. He only played one game. He might have been 4 for 4 against pressure. And so he leads the country as the best quarterback under pressure. And it's like, yeah, but it was only 4 snaps. Like, what is right. that? So just before we get there, understand, I have a very clear data point that I use. And so some people like JJ McCarthy aren't eligible for certain lists because he wasn't the starter for all 3 games. Eventually, here in the next couple weeks, that will reset and he'll have plenty of snaps. So I wanted to preface that. We also are going to talk about Minnesota. Are they real? Kansas? Are they real? We're going to talk about some college football storylines, I guess, from an educated standpoint. Had a fun time on Twitter last night, Chris. Don't know if you saw.
Which part on Twitter? Twitter was a war zone yesterday between Miami fans and Clemson fans. Like, it was toxic wasteland.
It was a war zone because I put out the video of Dabo Swinney running down the the hill in front of his team. And the Clemson fans were all butthurt because apparently he does it so that he can clap and hype his guys up coming down the tunnel. And I get that, but it still is a bad look. I mean, it's a guy leading the team out, but by himself, like, and the crowd goes crazy when Dabo runs. Like, I it's just a bad look and I don't like it. I don't care what his reason is.
And you're not the only one. A lot of people like it.
I mean, everyone outside of Clemson fans thinks that is a douchebag look. So I don't really care. And of course, then it can't be just conversation about that. It immediately has to turn into nonsense about me and posting all kinds of stuff. And I entertain it at times. It's funny to me. And I sent a bunch of my private DMs to our general group chat on Patreon, and they were dying at them. So anyways, it's an entertaining night in my life, Chris. That's all.
So my night on Twitter consisted of Miami fans, A, wanting to call you, B, wanting to fire Josh Gattis, and C, asking if you can send that video directly to Josh Gattis to make sure he watches it.
So if you didn't catch it, go check it out now. I have all 22 film for almost anyone in the country. That's what I break down teams based on. I don't like TV copies. And so I finally now have, I guess, privatized it. Like, it's not given to me from a friend that I don't want to get in trouble, essentially. So I'm using these films for my coaches' breakdowns. If you haven't checked them out on Patreon, patreon.com/menacetosports, I am offering a money-back guarantee. There will probably be 500 to 600 people in this show. This show will probably have 10,000 people watch it, like most of our shows do. A money-back guarantee, $20 a month. You get access to the Coach's Film Room episodes. They're about an hour long of game film and me breaking down different opponents. It's not just Ohio State. Now, I am excited about today's, because today's, after this show, I'm going to break down all 3 games of Jim Knowles' defense. So you're going to get a three-game breakdown of Jim Knowles' defense to kind of see what they're doing, who's playing well, and give you my thoughts on the scheme, the personnel, the execution, everything. It's going to be badass. I already made the cut-up. The cut-up itself is an hour and 20 minutes, Chris. So this might be a two-hour episode of just nuts and bolts, knee-deep in what Jim Knowles is doing on defense. Like, how are they so much better? Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited to record that this afternoon. I'm doing Georgia's offensive breakdown tomorrow. We already did Alabama's offense, Texas. I mean, we've done a number of episodes already. So anyways, if you're interested, patreon.com/menace to sports. The link is under Chris and in the bio, but the one on Josh Gattis's offense against Texas A&M, I had to make public, and it caused quite the stir amongst, I mean, I have Florida fans that were like talking shit to Miami fans about how they told you Josh Gattis wasn't it. Florida State fans, and then Miami fans that mm-hmm. were pissed off at how awful the offense was against Texas A&M. I mean, they were in agreement. Same thing that happened with the Alabama film. I mean, I am unapologetically honest about everything, about Ohio State, about any school. I do have a slight Ohio State bias for obvious reasons, but the Alabama film, when I did that breakdown, the Alabama message boards, I got screenshots sent to me where they, you know, for the most part, they agreed with everything I said, because there are fans out there that don't just have fan blinders and think their team is the best thing ever.
I agree. It was funny yesterday. One of the revelations was Michigan fans talking shit to Miami fans, basically saying, "We told you we didn't want him. He's our sloppy seconds." Right. And that to me was peak Twitter. That peak is peak Twitter right there. But Zach, before we get into things, can we talk about Scott Frost real quick? More's coming out about the Scott Frost tenure.
I got a video clip. Now, listen, this is unsubstantiated, and I'm not big on spreading those kind of rumors, but I thought this TikTok was hilarious. And if this shit is true, this man, Scott Frost, got the bag and did not give a fuck. So this is from TikTok. Watch this video on what happened. What went wrong with Scott Frost? Here you go. You want to find out? TikTok has the answer.
So apparently, Scott Frost was showing up late to practices, and he was sometimes hungover. And here's where things kind of get funny. He was playing video games, playing golf, and the golf team at Nebraska was complaining to the athletic director office that Scott and his friends was using the simulator all the time. And if that wasn't enough for you, he was kicked out of the country club and canceled a barbecue because he was too drunk, etc., etc. There was more.
That there's so much. If somebody really wants to write a book about this tenure, it would be, first of all, it would allow Trev to walk away and go, this is why. Because he can't talk about that stuff. Right. He can't talk about his head coach being late for practice every day. He can't talk about his head coach not making recruiting phone calls. He can't talk about, and I can talk about it, you know, because it's over. But there's a whole bunch of stuff. There was a mess up there. It was an absolute, you had assistant coaches going to the athletic department and saying, the AD and going, hey, this is happening. Help us. That should not happen.
So here's my question for the chat. Are you buying this shit that he was late to practice, showing up hungover, and using the golf team simulator with his buddies to the point where they had to complain to the AD? Are you buying it? Yes or no? Do you think that actually went down? Because if it did, this is the probably one of the greatest examples of I don't give a fuck that I've ever seen at this level. And I mean, it's one thing, you know, to be late to work. I mean, I've talked about it before. There was a 2-year stretch after I got divorced where I was late to work probably a dozen times in 2 years. Let's say 10, 12 times in 2 years. And, but I, by late to work, I mean, supposed to be there at 7. Most of the time I come in at 6:15, and you know, 12 times or so, I got there at 7:10 or 7:15. We're not talking 9 a.m., but we're talking a 10, 15 minute late to work, which in college football is an inexcusable thing. I mean, it was a major deal that I was late a couple times. But you're talking about practice, like showing up late to practice. The head coach is not there for practice. If that's true, whoo boy. No wonder they play like dog shit and these players didn't play hard for them. So I'm curious in the chat. Do you think it's true? Yes or no?
And how much of it? Like, if some of it is true, like if that's the reason they canceled the Dylan Raiola visit and barbecue, like that's a fireable offense in and of itself because Dylan Raiola's dad went to Nebraska.
That's what's crazy, right?
Yeah, there's numbers for him.
Yeah, his number one quarterback in the country's dad played at Nebraska, right? Mm-hmm. Played at Nebraska. And you cancel the barbecue for the number one quarterback in the country, who is a Nebraska legacy. It's almost as bad as him not recruiting Joe Burrow when Joe Burrow was transferring from Ohio State. Like, the epic failures, whether that stuff's true or not. Mm. I mean, just imagine where Scott Frost's program and where Scott Frost would be right now if he did his homework and did his due diligence and got Joe Burrow out of the portal, and or if he had Dylan Raiola committed right now. If he had Dylan Raiola committed now, his class would look different. The aura around him would look different. Everyone would be saying he just hasn't had a quarterback, but he's got one coming, yeah. Right? And I bet you he wouldn't have been fired.
No, if he lands Dylan Raiola, he's unfireable. Like, boosters yeah. love that kind of stuff. They won't fire him. I mean, Dylan Raiola is legitimately
1.0. And never mind the fact if he would have just gotten Joe Burrow. If he would have just done his homework and taken Joe Burrow. And I'm talking Joe Burrow as he stood in 2018, right? We're not talking about Joe Burrow 2019, or that was 2017, really. The 2017, 2018. I'm not saying the Joe Burrow we all know now. I'm saying with the quarterback play they had at Nebraska, Joe Burrow on his worst day would have been a valuable take at least. So it's just interesting conversation.
He made that snarky comment to the Burrow family, to Nebraska beat writers about Joe Burrow when Joe Burrow was looking for a home. He said, "You think he's better than the quarterback room we have now?"
So, what do you think, Scott, as you sip on your Mai Tai with your millions of dollars on some island right now, unemployed? You know, God bless you. You're living the American fucking dream. But, yeah, I mean, what do you think? Do you think he was better than your quarterback room?
Absolutely, because the quarterback room now, he has the one that was a starter there is now a transfer starter for Kansas State. And the other one won a Heisman and was in the Super Bowl last year. So anyway, I digress. Zach, we're a quarter of the way through the season, so it's time for you to start building your Heisman ladder in terms of what quarterbacks you think played the best. And I want you to rank these quarterbacks to talk about why. Stenson Bennett, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, the three beasts.
So out front, right out the gate, I will rank them Stetson Bennett 1, CJ Stroud 2, Bryce Young 3. And I'm doing that because a lot of people are going to say things like, well, Bryce Young's receivers are down and, you know, his receivers haven't played well. They were awful against Texas. I did a whole breakdown on that on our YouTube channel. You can go check that out. That's all true. Like, I think Bryce Young is a fantastic quarterback. I think he's exceptional. I think CJ has a better – we can get into all the details. I think CJ has a better arm, a little more arm talent, a little more accurate. But Bryce Young is a baller, a playmaker. I mean, he runs for first down, scrambles. Like, he makes plays with his feet. He's exceptional. But your receiving core matters. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just say, oh, he's a great player, but his team sucks. It's like, okay, well, then he's not going to be as impactful of a player – as if they weren't, right? Like, if CJ Stroud is equal to Bryce Young with what I've seen from the receiving core, offensive line, the whole gambit, CJ Stroud will be a more impactful player this year. He'll be a better player this year, even if they're even. So that stuff matters. You can qualify it so that it's not a shot at Bryce Young, but the fact still remains. That matters. Your supporting cast matters. And so I did a little deep dive, a little 3-week premature analysis, my week three quarterback analysis, and there's a couple things that I noticed when I studied these analytics. So first of all, I qualified. I already said that you have to have a certain number of pass attempts to even qualify for the list. Otherwise, you get some quarterback for, you know, Army, who's only thrown three passes and one of them was under pressure and he completed it, and he's the best quarterback under pressure. So when I look at it, I always look at under pressure versus blitz, right? And I'm going to go through a number of things here. First of all, quarterbacks under pressure this year. CJ Stroud is number 2 in America. And I also throw out guys at certain schools that I don't classify as relevant to the national landscape, because that's what this show is about. So CJ Stroud is the number 2 quarterback under pressure, 80% completion percentage. And a guy we're going to talk about in a minute that is making some noise with Lance Leopold at Kansas is their quarterback, Jalen Daniels, who's number 4. Under pressure, number 4 quarterback under pressure, 67%. Hendon Hooker is tied with him at number 4. Tuilagi Tagovailoa is 6. KJ Jefferson, who gets no respect in the SEC. We want to talk about Will Levis. We want to talk about Hendon Hooker. KJ Jefferson has probably been the best quarterback throwing the ball in conference to date. Yeah, you could argue Stetson Bennett over him.
Or Hendon?
Yeah, no, not throwing the ball. But as Hendon's played well. But so, and then KJ Jefferson at 9, Stetson Bennett at 12, Bryce Young at 47th in the country at 40% completion percentage under pressure. You're going to notice a theme here if you pay attention closely. How about versus blitz? When teams decide we're going to blitz this guy, right? He's killing us. We need to blitz him. We need to unsettle him. We need to make him, you know, get shaky a little bit. That's what teams are trying to do, right? They're trying to get after the quarterback's ass to make him underperform. Number 1 in the country, None other than Stetson Bennett from the Georgia Bulldogs at almost 90% completion percentage versus blitz defense. Number two, you might ask, Chris, C.J. Stroud from the Ohio State University. Caleb Williams, number three. An underlying theme, Jalen Daniels from Kansas at number four. Hendon Hooker at number six. K.J. Jefferson at number eight. Tuilagi Tagovailoa at number 14. And once again, holding up that consistent spot at 47th in the country, none other than Heisman candidate, Heisman winner, Bryce Young at 52% completion percentage versus blitz. It's just funny.
I'm going to ask you, Zach.
Go ahead.
Is Caleb Williams better than Bryce Young this year?
I mean, no. Not as a pure player, but but I think, you know, there's a number of reasons. I think, you know, Bryce Young has played Texas. Caleb Williams has played no one close to Texas. Bryce Young's receivers have underperformed. Eventually that should get fixed or else he'll be out of the conversation anyways. But I think that there is a case to be made that Bryce Young is not executing and performing on the field in the top 10 quarterback category. There is that conversation to be had. It doesn't mean he's not a better player. It's just, we're talking performance, right? That's what matters. I don't give a fuck how good, how talented the kid is or how good he could be. We're talking about execution on the field, all things considered. Right. Who calls the plays? That matters. Because we're going to talk about Tyler Van Dyke in a minute. He's not even in the conversation. Is it because of him?
Or unfortunately, when we talk quarterbacks, it's a package deal. It's like we're talking about quarterbacks and the schemes they play in because, like, a lot of times, like, when guys play in great schemes, I mean, that's never a knock against them because they execute at that high enough level. I mean, if you don't think Bryce Young is executing, then a guy like Caleb Williams, you could say, has performed better to this point. If you're ranking a quarterback ladder, that'd be the fourth guy.
Absolutely. And so here's the other thing I look at, right? I look at, and this is where the Hendon Hooker conversation comes in, right? How much are offensive coordinators helping these quarterbacks, right? And the number one way to help them is to run hard play action or just quick, easy RPOs where you are reading a guy and it should be like routes on air, right? Yeah, you're just throwing to a guy who's open because if that defender covers him, you hand it off, right? Or hard play action to get people to bite, to get kids wide open. And here's where Georgia and Todd Monken have done a great job. When you look at Stetson Bennett and his success rate, when it's drop back pass versus play action or RPO, he receives a 23% increase in production. So his completion percentage is 23% higher in play action and RPOs versus dropback, which is great job by the offense. And that doesn't mean anything, doesn't say that Stetson Bennett is not a good quarterback. It's just showing that they're helping him a lot, right? Comparatively, C.J. Stroud, who's 23rd in the country, only has a 6% bump in RPOs. That can mean two things, right? Either their RPOs and play action suck, or he's just really good at drop back also. When you look at Bryce Young, he actually has a negative 7% drop. So when they run play action and RPOs, it's not helping him at all. And that's criminal. And it all comes down to perimeter blocking. It all comes down to the play action schemes. That's why Bryce Young is worse when they try to help him, because the schemes and perimeters are not as good. And even further than that, to go in on my Clemson brethren that was so kind to me all evening last night, when we're talking about your offensive staff, DJ Uiagalelei has a 28% drop in play action pass and RPOs. He is 28% worse completion percentage when they try to help him. That's how dog shit the concepts are they are running. If they just would drop back and pass and let him read defenses, he is a 30% better quarterback. It's amazing, isn't it?
It sounds like bring him over to Columbus because we run a lot of we don't do the hard play action stuff.
Right. And so here's the next thing
but
I
don't,
look at.
Don't Chris. Coaches get this number to build game plans around?
I mean, absolutely they do. I mean, they're mostly off of film and then they get analytics on the side. But this is more I'm trying to deliver this to the fans. Like be careful what you're evaluating. Like DJ Uiagalelei, like, yeah, he's struggled, but the scheme is not helping him. They're giving him no easy throws. I'll never forget back to Geno Atkins at West Virginia when he had Tavon Austin. He had like 10 jet sweep push passes a game for like 180 yards, and his stat line would be insane. And you'd watch the film, you're like, he barely threw it. And you know, not to say he's not a good quarterback, but stats can be deceiving if you don't really break it down and analyze what's going on. Here's the other thing I look at, Chris. Screen passes. That's cheating, right? Screen passes are cheating. You just throw the ball behind the line of scrimmage and a guy runs for 30 yards and you get 30 yard passing. And it's just like those jet sweep touch passes. So I call them cheater, pumpkin eater, right? Screen passes. You're cheating. The biggest cheater statistically is number two in the country, relevant cheater, Stetson Bennett. 27% of his production has come from screen passes. Number three, Caleb Williams, 25%. CJ Stroud, number 36. He's not getting help that much. Only 11% of his production has been from screens. And if you watch the film, you know that. Bryce Young, we broke down their game against Texas. He's 38th, also at 11% of his production is from screen passes. So what does that tell you? CJ and Bryce are not being... they're not padding stats with bullshit screens, right? That's what that means. Stetson is. Now, that's not to say, this is not a negative thing, right? Stetson Bennett also has Kenny McIntosh, who, by the way, is the most productive player in America in the pass game. He has the highest yards per routes run. I didn't write it down, but the running back at Georgia leads the country in production in the throw game.
Jeez.
Wild.
I thought that would be Jahmyr Gibbs.
You would think, and I think he just hasn't been featured as much against team. I mean, Georgia's played two legitimate teams. They played Oregon and South Carolina. So Kenny McIntosh, you know, was more a part of their offense than Jahmyr Gibbs has been at Alabama. But and just back to side note, and I'm going to reference it again on Patreon. The coach's film session today is Georgia's offense, and Jim Knowles' defense. So Georgia's offense will probably go out tomorrow, but I'm recording it today. So we're breaking down Georgia's offense. Take a look at what they're doing with Brock Bowers and the whole crew. Mm-hmm. Here's the next thing I look at, Chris. QB release times. How fast do they get the ball out of their hands? And why has Kansas had success so far? Because Jalen Daniels, is number one in the country getting the ball out. He has to. He has an offensive line from Kansas. They're not going to be Alabama's offensive line. He's getting the ball out in 2.2 seconds. And J.J. McCarthy's 12th, getting it out in 2.5 seconds. Stetson Bennett, 2.56 at 19th. Hendon Hooker, I mean, I could run stats all day. But here's what I saw when I saw this, right? You talk about programs that have recruited similarly, right? Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama. CJ Stroud has averaged 2.85 seconds per throw. They haven't given up a lot of sacks. That tells you that their O-line is performing and they're letting things develop. That's 47th in the country. Similarly, Bryce Young, 2.91 seconds to throw, 54th in the country. Same thing. Offensive line, a little lackluster in the Texas game, but they've allowed Bryce Young to, and it's also the fact that he scrambles around. DJ Uiagalelei has been forced to get the ball out. He's the fourth fastest time in college football at 2.35 seconds. So Clemson is, one, he's not scrambling around, extending plays and letting guys get open. Two, their offensive line has not allowed him to drop back and have some concepts develop. So the numbers can be so telling if you understand the why.
What you're looking at and pairing it up with tape, not just like, oh, that number.
Well, and here's the other thing. Once you start flirting with much longer than the 2.8 that CJ Stroud has, now you're talking about could be a processing issue. He might not read through plays as fast. And you know, it is what it is, but who's last in Power 5 football, the slowest to get the ball out? Malik Cunningham at Louisville. One, because he's a freaky athlete and runs around for all over the place. And two, I don't think he gets through progressions very fast. You know who's second to last? Second slowest release in college football?
Wouldn't it be? My guess is either Bryce or Anthony Richardson.
It is Caleb Williams
for USC. Still. Last year, he was at the top of that list as well.
3.2 seconds. A lot of it can be attributed to how athletic he is, right? Being able to extend plays. But the other side of it is you should have some quick games, some screens, things like that. And get through your progressions faster.
That is interesting that he's still like down there, because that's now a trend, because last year at Oklahoma, he led the country in holding the ball too long.
Absolutely. And so the next piece of evaluating a quarterback, right? That is all like, how do they perform in certain scenarios? How fast do they process? How do they get it out? The next thing to look at is, how do they do on all the throws? All the throws you need to ask a quarterback to make, right? To win the national championship, you have to make all the throws, right? You have to. Or you have to have a generational defense like Georgia did, but never mind that. So deep ball quarterbacks, Chris, the best deep ball throwers in America. You have to hit the deep ball to open up the intermediate and short game. You have to be able to do it. Number the highest rated relevant quarterback to this show, at least number four in America, Tua Tagovailoa.
Tua,
67% completion percentage. Right behind him is CJ Stroud at 5, 64% completion percentage. I can go through the whole list, but the moral story, we start getting down there, Stetson Bennett, 35th in the country, 36% completion percentage on deep balls, and the lowest of any relevant quarterback. You know their name, and I will contribute it or attribute it to his receiving core. Bryce Young, 62nd in the country. He has completed 14% of his deep balls. So we can blame the receivers all day long, and I agree, it's valid. But you cannot convince me this kid is a Heisman Trophy caliber quarterback with these this type of performance. Is he a Heisman Trophy caliber player? Yes. Has he had a Heisman Trophy caliber performance? No. Because outside of a scramble and a missed tackle against Texas and a couple ridiculously freaky looking throws, he was below average. Or not him. The performance, the quarterback performance was below average, albeit because of the receivers. That's just true.
It's all a package deal. I'm interested. I do want to get your take at some point on Bryce Young's drop back, because it looks like to me when he takes a drop back, the issue with struggling to push the ball down the field on deep throws is because he doesn't take a traditional drop back. He like almost backpedals.
Yeah, he does. Stepping into it. And I broke that down on that, and that's available to the public. Bryce Young versus Texas. He doesn't take traditional quarterback drops, and I can't understand why, because that one helps your offensive lineman set the depth of the rush, and then you can step up or find, you know, navigate and maneuver the pocket. But, you know, it's a number of things. I mean, it's that he, you know, his receivers aren't efficient. They aren't where they're supposed to be. They don't get their depth in routes. I mean, X, Y, Z, there's a million reasons why. That is certainly one of them. But did you know, Chris, speaking of this week's matchup, which we will get into later, you referenced AR-15, and this can segue right into your next topic about what went wrong. Anthony Richardson at Florida, right? He had the jump spin move, throw to a wide open guy that everyone was like, he is back. And I broke down the Florida film. He looked good in that first game against Utah. He did. Mm-hmm. He is the least accurate quarterback in the United States of America on short throws under 10 yards. He's the least accurate quarterback in all of college football. He completes less than half of his short throws. 48%. You're talking about, to lead the country, you have to be like 93%, 94%, like almost every time you complete it, because those are quick, easy throws, right? Under half.
Yikes.
Yikes is right.
That is abysmal. And, you know, I know he does have that freaky jump, kind of spin move kind of play. First of all, he throws everything way too hard, Zach. Like, everything is a fastball from him, and it's kind of ridiculous. Additionally, you know, that was a two-point conversion. We are now in week three, Zach. AR has zero touchdown passes this season.
Yeah,
how long can that go?
You can't go any longer. What do you mean? They just lost to Kentucky because of it. I mean, it's got to change. Mm-hmm. At some point, you have to have a quarterback that can throw it for some tuggies, some TDs, or else.
You referenced the half field reads. It looks like it's becoming a growing issue because teams are now squeezing that side. Like,
yeah, just, I mean, it's you know, teams once they get your book on film, they know what to do to try to stop you and limit you. And his big deal is he's a great athlete that can run around. And if they let him do that, someone might pop wide open. And it's one of those, he can't miss that kid. He's so open, right? But if they make him stay in the pocket, make him go through a read, or I mean, good God, if you can't hit a short throw, imagine what he does on intermediate and deep balls. So he's just not an accurate thrower. That's just the moral story. He's not.
Zach, if Jack Miller gets healthy, say week four or week five, and Anthony Richardson still has not thrown a touchdown pass, at what point do you try to work in Jack Miller into the game?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to at some point, right? You have to get him in the game at some point.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I would think. But again, Jack Miller does have the injury, has been practicing, but he's been going through the playbook. I mean, at some point, you would assume that kind of those years with Ryan Day, you would assume he'd be able to kind of at least a full field read every now and again and throw the ball to his blind side and maybe throw a touchdown pass at this point. Because at this point, Colin McCord has more touchdown passes than Anthony Richardson.
Right, which is absurd, right? You can't compete in the SEC East and have a quarterback that doesn't throw touchdowns. I mean, it's just not possible unless you're trying to run a Paul Johnson fucking triple option. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, even those quarterbacks, Josh Nesbitt, even he threw touchdowns.
Right.
He was throwing them to Demaryius Thomas, so... anyway, Zach, TVD as well. Those guys, kind of what happened with those two? Because going into the season, those two were definitely Heisman hopefuls, and now they've kind of fallen off the wagon in terms of kind of – do you blame more of that on the staff and the play calling or on the individual quarterbacks themselves?
No, I mean, it depends on the player. I mean, they're very different players. I think Anthony Richardson, a lot of it is just, you know, he's just not an accurate quarterback, and fundamentally he's not a very clean quarterback. Whereas Tyler Van Dyke, I think, is both of those things, and I think he He missed some throws against Texas A&M for sure, but a lot of it was scheme and receiver oriented. I mean, guys weren't where they were supposed to be. Guys weren't, you know, getting proper spacing, didn't understand the concepts. And, you know, he didn't play well, but you can attribute a lot of that lack of success on the wideout group and the scheme and the coaching.
Can you tell when a quarterback doesn't trust his receivers or offensive coordinator? That's what it looked like from Tyler Van Dyke.
Absolutely, you can tell. I mean, you even look at Bryce Young. Bryce Young doesn't trust his receivers at all, because there's certain concepts that you need to throw the ball as a receiver's getting into his break, not once he comes out of it. And that's what you do, right? You evaluate, like, how much chemistry is there, and how much do they trust each other? And you watch the great ones, and we broke it down. C.J. Stroud, there's times where he throws the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr. Marvin Harrison Jr. has just started breaking down. And by the time he comes out of his route, the ball is there, right? Bryce Young is waiting to make sure these kids are going to break. Like, did they get their depth? Are they going to bend it the proper angle? He waits to make sure, and that can be problematic, because now DBs have an extra half a second to break on the ball and break it up. So absolutely, you can tell.
And it almost forces a stare down. Like, I noticed with TVD, he was staring down receivers, like making sure they got eyes back on the ball and had good body language. And when that happens, obviously, it gives the DBs more time. Zach, the Heisman is supposed to be about the best football player in America, and yet maybe the two best football players in America are a tight end and a defensive end, an edge rusher. Zach, what's more likely, a tight end winning the Heisman or a defensive player?
Well, and probably a tight end. I mean, although if Will Anderson has a better year than last year, it's going to be hard to deny that he at least belongs in New York City. He probably should win it. But Georgia's doing something that Michigan did with Charles Woodson, and not playing him on both sides of the ball, but they're not just allowing him to be a great tight end, because he will win the Mackey Award. That's almost a foregone conclusion. But they're handing him jet sweeps, reverses. If he can be a dynamic player in those scenarios, if they put in a middle screen like we used to run with Aaron Hernandez, if they start getting him involved outside of just, you know, corner routes and shit like that, if they show his multiplicity, I think that could become sexy enough that they would consider it, right? And can you imagine the recruiting tool they will have if they have the first ever tight end Heisman Trophy winner? Holy shit, they'll never not get a tight end ever.
It's just to me, it's hard because it's just not sexy. Like there's going to be receivers that put up. It's crazy. It's sorcery. Yeah. Like I cut up some stuff earlier. It's freaking sorcery what they're doing.
It really is. And he's a fan. I mean, unbelievably talented kid.
Mm-hmm. Super talented kid. And it's crazy because like he's on a roster full of freaks at tight end. And he's like the least freaky of the tight ends, but he's the best. He just does everything better.
You just say that because he's white. You're racist ass.
No, that's not true. He's like,
how's he the least freakiest? This motherfucker just took a reverse jet sweeps. Like he is the freakiest of freaky.
I'm saying like he's only 6'3". He weighs about 250. Like
please roast Chris in the chat. He just said that shit because he's white. He's racist.
He's fast, but the other kid is like 6'7", hurdling kids, throwing defensive backs for like into the stands. Like the other kid is freakier than him. Brock Bowers is just better.
So who's the better basketball player, the Monstars or Lola Bunny?
Well, the Monstars, obviously, but.
No, like, Lola Bunny had handles. What are you talking about? Like, you're just going off appearance, Chris. In terms of
freakiness. I mean, I don't like using Lola Bunny and freakiness in the same sentence, but it's like,
what kind of shit are you into?
Whoops. Hey, I didn't mean
animal that. All day over here. Chris is into anima porn. Anima, like, not animal.
It's like this. It's like, never mind. You know what? Forget it. I'm going to be racist. I'm racist today, y'all. So sorry. So sorry, Brock Bowers. I'm your biggest fan. Zach, I want to talk about Minnesota and Michigan State this week. I'm not doing a full preview, but Minnesota quietly has blown out some teams early. They have a shutout. They're averaging over 40 points a game. They beat Colorado and Western Illinois. Obviously not super teams, but you always say you can only play who's on your schedule, and dominating people on your schedule means something. It's not nothing, but it means something.
I mean, they've had a schedule that would rival Michigan. I mean, you're talking about New Mexico State, Western Illinois, and Colorado. Those are probably three of the worst teams that are fielding a football team in Division I sports. So it's tough to have a real barometer here. And after Michigan State just got destroyed by Washington, you know, we're still learning right now. But to your point, Minnesota did what they're supposed to do. That's all you can ask, right? You play these three shitty teams. I mean, you can bitch at the AD about scheduling, but PJ Fleck didn't schedule this schedule. He's just coaching a team, developing a team, and they went out and did what they were supposed to do in those three games. So I think we will learn something this weekend in that game, that 3:30 matchup this Saturday. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to watch it. And we will break it down a little bit because you know what I'm most excited about? Because I'm a sucker for a feel-good story. Mo Ibrahim. I mean, after tearing his Achilles against Ohio State last year, missed the whole year. And I thought, I talked about him in the preseason so much because I think he was going to be a breakout star, even more so than he was the year before. And now he's healthy. He's playing well. I'm excited to see him go down this stretch and play some good teams and see what PJ Fleck can do. I mean, everyone knows my thoughts on PJ Fleck. I mean, he's not Dabo, but he's close.
He's like just used car salesman, but yeah. he tends to, it works for him. Like it really works for him.
It does. So, I mean, he's had success. It doesn't mean it doesn't work. I just don't really like the guy.
Are they more legit than Kansas?
I don't. Yeah. I mean, I would hope so. I guess I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
Well, we just talked about Kansas has the quarterback play. So I'm interested kind of moving forward. Again, they have Michigan State and Mel Tucker. I'm not going to ask you to predict the game right now, but that's a game that probably will preview at some point this week. Obviously, Michigan State coming off of a loss. Are they as legit as Penn State, or does Penn State get notching that win this week and kind of put them in a cut above Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, Penn State has proven more. As down as Auburn is, that is still an electric atmosphere. That team's still a talented team, more so than Colorado. So Penn State is definitely a few steps above Minnesota as they stand today. That obviously, it's ever fluid and always changing. But right now, based on resume and what you know about the rosters, the talent level on that roster, Penn State is the more likely team to have make an impact this year.
And it keeps striking me that Josh Pate said they look so much bigger and physical and faster than an SEC team, because we're not used to hearing that. Zach, a couple of other big games this week. Number 6, Clemson taking on number 21, Wake Forest. Is this a game where you think Clemson can get got? Not too much of a breakdown, but just like...
I think Clemson can get got in any of their games against a formidable opponent. And I think Wake has it's going to be their toughest matchup to date, I would say. So I don't think Wake's going to win the game. But we'll see what this Clemson team's all about as we go down the stretch, because this is one of these games, and we can break this game down later in the week. One of these games, they're going to face a team that's just that perfect storm, and it's going to hit Clemson and shock the college football world. I don't know that it's Wake, but again, it's a ranked opponent for a team that I think's overrated.
Yeah, it's a ranked opponent with good quarterback play.
That's it.
That is so dangerous. Like no matter who you are, dangerous. Especially if your output on offense has not been kind of up to where you think it is. I mean, we just talked about kind of the issues with the Clemson staff and the issues kind of moving forward in terms of like their quarterback play has not been it. I do want to ask too about Florida, Tennessee. I mean, this feels like a game where AR has to throw the ball to beat Tennessee, but we're not sure if he can throw the ball. What are you thinking here?
I mean, you got it. There's two things you look at here. Hendon Hooker's the better quarterback. It's at Tennessee, and Tennessee has a ton of momentum, and they feel like, I mean, they've had this Florida monkey on their back. They haven't beaten Florida in freaking forever, and it's at home. A lot of hype. Hendon Hooker, the program's in the right direction. They got recruiting classes. Nico's committed. I mean, so much positivity in Tennessee. Florida's coming off a loss against an average Kentucky team, if you ask me. So I think Tennessee's going to win this game. And despite what I said on Coach JB's show yesterday, because I was just trying to talk shit to Sarah Blake, but I think Tennessee wins this game, and I think this is a real momentum builder as they go in. And two weeks from now, they got to play Alabama.
No, I agree. And it's funny because Tennessee's a team, Zach, that got so much hype this offseason. And then when the season started, it's been pretty quiet about Tennessee.
I mean, it has. Yeah, but I mean,
they beat Pitt, but yet.
Yeah, they've handled their business. I think if they win this game, because game day's going there, it's a huge atmosphere, big spotlight. Everyone's going to watch that game because that's one of the better games this weekend. If they can beat Florida, and God forbid if they can beat them handedly, I think everyone will jump on that train once again, because it was kind of an off-season train that went into the woods, and it's about to come back out of the woods, and people are going to jump right back on that bitch.
You're talking about Arkansas and their quarterback not getting a ton of respect. They play A&M this weekend, who's ranked 23rd after their win over Miami. Is this a game where he gets some national respect, or just a take care of business and maybe we'll see you in 2 or 3 weeks for KJ Jefferson?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Arkansas needs to win this game, and they need to play a great game. They need to show that they're fundamentally sound on defense, that they're equipped, right? Because all you're looking for, we talked about it. I talked about it on JB's show this also. When you look at these games, if you're a college football fan like I am, I'm a Midwest branded college football fan that cares about the national landscape. Well, Arkansas A&M probably aren't going to be in the picture for the national landscape, other than the fact that you're looking for someone that shows you something that they might be able to knock off either Alabama or Georgia, right? Because right now, those are the two that look like they're destined to be in that college football playoff. And that's what all this conversation is about. Can Arkansas knock off Bama? That's the question. And we're going to find out more about this team if that capability is there when they play A&M this weekend.
Exactly. And kind of why we talk about these teams coming up, especially Tennessee and Arkansas, Zach, because there's a stretch of the schedule. We want to know how good these teams are that Bama's playing. We thought it was going to be a war zone kind of going into it. Maybe it's a little weaker. Maybe it's a little weaker than we initially thought. But coming up after they play Vandy, Zach, they have Arkansas, A&M, Tennessee, all with some tests this week. So it's just the perfect measuring stick. Moving forward, I do want to see, because for intensive purposes, KJ Jefferson feels like the type of quarterback that could give Nick Saban's team problems.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. And you could even look, I mean, we could look, go all the way back. I mean, last college football season in its entirety, KJ Jefferson was the best quarterback in college football throwing deep balls. I mean, he was a shot machine, 65%. He hit 65% of his deep balls last entire football season. This is not like first three against bad teams. This is the entire year last year in an SEC schedule. He was number one in the country ahead of CJ Stroud. And you look at all these analytics that I have that I keep here forever. He was the number two quarterback under pressure. He completed 55% of his passes in an SEC schedule. So this kid's not getting the respect he deserves. And I think it's about time we start talking about him, especially if he can beat A&M. And God forbid this kid upsets Bama. You got to put this motherfucker on a Heisman watch list. And I put him on now because I think he has the capability with what Sam Pittman does, running the football, how hard he coaches, the toughness on that defense, and with how well this kid has played through whatever it is now, 17 games or 16 games. I mean, he absolutely belongs in the conversation, and you feel like he's like the forgotten kid.
Yeah, it is. I'm here for it. Before we get into factor or cap, Zach, I'm getting absolutely just destroyed in the comments about my comment about Brock Bowers. And I just want to clarify just real quick. I do not think Brock Bowers is unathletic. My point was in terms of just freakier athletes. I thought the other two were a little bit better, not based on race, just based on size.
Hashtag Chris hates white people.
I've said a lot of crazy stuff, and like I'm like my character is being attacked here pretty hard in the comments. But just real quick, like my point about Washington, he's just a little bigger, and I think he has similar speed, but not near the twitchiness that Bowers had. He's 6'7", 265. Yeah, he's 6'7", 265, and can really run. And then Gilbert, who's really not playing, is 6'5", 240. And like if you look at his athletic score, like he's a freak athletically as well. They're all freaks. They're all exceptional athletes. Brock Bowers is white and can really play.
All things can be true, right?
Yeah, like all things can be true. It's funny because I made a cut up today and I dropped it in the folder and I almost named it Brock Bowers for Heisman because I do love Brock Bowers. I think he's a really good tight end on that point. So anyway, I just want to get that off there because they're Mr. P and them are going off on me, Zach. They think I'm some flaming racist.
Well, it's funny because it's true.
Okay, calm down. Okay. Thank you all for hearing my apology. Something you won't hear Zach do anytime soon. I'm fighting for my life. Damn, my brother can't even apologize about it. It's me fighting for my life.
It's too funny. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. All right. Today's episode, I have Factor Cap. And I opened it up to kind of all Midwest and college football. And obviously, this is the way it works. I read a statement to Zach, either from Twitter or things that I've seen around, and I ask him if it's true or false, if it's fact or cap. And the first one is this. Josh Gattis will be Miami's offensive coordinator next year.
Cap.
Oh, you think
There's no way. I mean, it's going to be tough for Mario to demote him or fire him after one season. But what I watched on film, this team is more talented and should be performing better. I'm not saying they should have beat Texas A&M, but that was a poor coaching job. And if that continues the rest of the year, like I believe it will, like we watched at Michigan in 2020, I believe that Mario Cristobal has no patience for that. He has no time to waste. He's trying to get the momentum and build back the U now. And that first year is so critical. You don't have to be like overly successful, but you have to show development. You have to win a game or two that you maybe weren't supposed to. You think back to our 2012 season at Ohio State. I know we went 12-0, but we won some big games that we kind of pulled out of our ass, and it built for so much momentum in recruiting. That's what he needs. He can't go through a lackluster year this year and say, all right, let's Let's see if we can get a little better and go through a second one. No, at that point, the program's doomed. It's not going to come back to relevancy. I believe that Josh Gattis is going to have to improve the products going on the field. I don't have faith that that's going to happen. So I believe Mario will be forced to make a move in the offseason.
I couldn't find it earlier when I was looking it up, but I know he's making probably over $1 million from Miami. And when you make that kind of money, your job is for your unit to be the best coach unit. Like there, yes. It better be a $1 million unit. I know he's making $900,000 at Michigan. Next factor cap: Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka are both better than Jordan Addison.
I mean, that's a bold statement. I think Emeka Egbuka is there's a real case to be made there, because he's done it in every game we've watched. He did it against Notre Dame with a depleted secondary, albeit, but Marv still has to prove that he belongs in that conversation. And I'm not saying he's not. I mean, a kid is freaky talented. You watched him make highlight plays against Arkansas State and Toledo. But when Notre Dame was on the field with an average secondary, Marv was kind of non-existent. And that's even watching the film. That's not just stat lines. That's evaluating the film, which we did on our Patreon. So he's not in that conversation yet. Will he be at the end of the year? I believe he has the skill set and he has the coach to get him in that conversation. But right now, the question should be, is Emeka Egbuka better than Jordan Addison? And I still need to see more, but I believe he will be. Yes. So half fact. Cap, half fact. I guess cap. Fact. They both are not better. But
fact and cap at the same time.
Yeah, I'll qualify it.
Here we go. Scheme matters more than talent.
Oh, fuck no. Talent always matters more than anything. Always.
Okay. Capped. That's capped. Cool. Just thought I would get the one out there. Ooh, Mike Hall is a top five defensive tackle in the nation.
Absolutely he is. Matter of fact, Chris, did you know that Ohio State has two of the top four defensive tackles when it comes to pass rush productivity in Mike Hall and Tyleek Williams? So Mike Hall is absolutely a top five defensive tackle in college football. Yes. Fact.
That sounds like a super fact. Okay.
Super fact.
Outside of Ohio State, Michigan has the best quarterback in the Big Ten.
Ooh, cap, because I need to see JJ McCarthy against a good defense. You can't do that yet. Tua Tagovailoa, it was near the tops of every list last season, and this season he is once again. So he has a resume, it's proven track record. He is the next best quarterback in the Big Ten until JJ McCarthy proves otherwise. Do I think JJ McCarthy could be the better player? Yes. Do I think he will be the better player? Yes. Has he proven that yet? The answer is no.
Okay. That's fair. This next statement: Bama runs a better offense, has a better offense than the University of Georgia.
Stop it. That's one of them big caps. You know that meme with the dude with the big cap?
Super
not
capper.
Even, not even close. Just because of the execution, the perimeter. I mean, no, absolutely not.
Super capper. Okay, the next one. The weakest point of this Ohio State team is the defensive backs.
Ooh, that is bold. I'm going to have to say fact. As much as it pains me to say it, after I made the Ohio State defensive cut up and I haven't recorded the coach's film room session yet, but after watching it, I believe that we only have one corner on roster that is a championship caliber corner. And so, and I believe that's always been the case, because I think Denzel Burke has a chance, but he's got a lot of growth that needs to happen. The safeties are outstanding. Lathan Ransom is the undercover MVP of this fucking defense. He is all over the field. It's unreal. And I like Ronnie Hickman. I like Josh Proctor now that he's playing again after getting benched after one play against Notre Dame. I think, who'd I leave off? Tanner McAllister's played outstanding also. And Cameron Brown has played well outside of one play. So I that other corner spot, because I watched J.K. Johnson, I don't think he's the answer. I don't think he's ready yet. I don't know that they have a guy to play that other corner spot at a championship caliber. Like, we're talking Georgia, right? That's the bar.
Correct.
If that's the bar, probably defensive backs. I mean, it's on the defense, it's not the linebackers, not the D-line, not the safeties. So it's the one corner spot. If you talk about entire team, I need to see the receivers perform better against good competition, but I don't think you could say that they're in a worse shape than the corners, right? The offensive line, I thought, it has played outstanding through three games. The tight end position has played great. Look at Cade Stover in the throw game and blocking. Running back position, I mean, Travion Henderson maybe hasn't lived up to the hype yet, but both backs have played great. So, and a quarterback, I mean, we all know that situation, one of the best in the country and, you know, finally ran the ball twice. So it's hard to say what CJ Stroud is going to be the worst spot on the team. No, of course not. So it's got to be that one corner position. Denzel Burke's the guy that, if you want to be dramatic, everything is contingent on Denzel Burke. Every dream, hope, and aspiration Buckeye fans have are all laying on the shoulders of a second year player. And no pressure, Denzel, but that's the state of Buckeye Nation right now.
Final factor cap. Nick Singleton is the best running back in the Big Ten. That's the kid from Penn State.
Oh, I got to see. Yeah, he's really fucking good, man. He's really good.
Zach, he's so good.
I'm going to say cap because I got to see him. He's played three games. I'm going to say cap until I see him play some more games. But it's definitely a conversation that will be had all year.
He's up to like what, 12 yards a carry?
He's up to like, I think he already has 1,000 yards. I think he's 43 yards a carry. He scored 14 touchdowns in three games. It's just crazy.
That shit's crazy. All right, Zach, I want to get super chats in here and then we're going to skate on out of here. Thank you, Easy Eye, for the two. All the best NFL offenses utilize the fullback. Basically, do you think we should use the fullback, Zach?
I mean, we use Mitch Rossi.
Oh, yeah, we do.
They don't utilize a fullback in the throw game. I mean, we use him. We use him on what they call search, which is like a stretch with an insert. We use him to block, a lot of split zone, a number of different things. Split zone, pass protection. We use him a bunch. And I agree. You need that H-back type of guy.
Thank you, Raymond, for the 10. Shouldn't Arizona State be the easiest place in the country to recruit to? They have the most beautiful...
Man, I'm telling
you, in the world, and they're ain't exactly shy, if you know what I mean.
If there's one of my favorite places to recruit was to go to Scottsdale or Phoenix, that area. But yeah, I agree. I don't really know the infrastructure out there, what the problem is. I'd imagine it's part administration.
I believe Herm Edwards kind of has hinted to a research a resource issue with the money, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it might be it too. I'm not that familiar with Arizona State, but to your point, boy, it's tough to beat Arizona State's co-eds. Well, not even co-eds. I mean, they're 35-year-old women. You're like, Jesus, how old is she? She's 35? Looks 22.
MC Robinson, thank you for the 5. Who was the better corner, Denzel Ward or Jeff Okuda?
That is really tough. They're so similar. I mean, they both are so good at just press man coverage and also both so physical. I'll give the nod to Denzel because I think he was a little bit more physical, but that's not to say Jeff Okuda wasn't a physical corner. I'll give the nod to Denzel, and we could call it recency bias because Jeff has dealt with some injuries and Denzel's been playing pretty well in the NFL. So we'll give the nod to Denzel, but that's close, man. Both of them were really good.
What a torch pass, because Jeffrey Okuda's first start in college came the game that Denzel Ward elected to sit out in the Rose Bowl against Sam Darnold.
Right.
That's just some absurd stuff when you look back and think about it. Thank you for the 2, my man. Let me keep scrolling down. More dangerous, Frost and Bev Curls or Herman and Stews?
I'm going Herman because that's substantiated. I've witnessed it. I know that to be fact. I don't know that stuff about Scott Frost is true. So if it is true, I'll give the nod to Frost. But for what we know is fact, I'm going Tom Herman.
Well, you'll have to go research it. Like, how dangerous are they? You know, we'll
call some people in Nebraska.
Well, they'll all be willing to talk now.
From
rumor has it. I bet I'm scrolling down. Rumors about Sonny's brother transferring to Ohio State. Sonny's playing time going to increase this year. Thank you, Paul, for the 5.
No, I've heard that rumor. Chris talked about it on his Chris's Corner episode today, which is for Patreon only. It's only $5 a month. If you want to listen to Chris's kind of offshoot show, go sign up. You get all these episodes on an RSS feed on your phone. Just plug that real quick. Chris,
yeah. It's recruiting a good episode. Focus too, for all the recruiting nerds out there.
Yeah, it's a recruiting focused show where Chris dives into all this shit. And he's making me more aware. So now I'm doing recruiting breakdowns and all of that on Patreon also. But we have heard that rumor. It sounds like they want that to happen, I guess, from what I understand. But no, Sonny's playing time is not going to increase. I watched those young kids play at the end of the Toledo game, and there are some freaky, freaky talented dudes. But they are so far away from playing on the field in meaningful snaps. And that's, not a knock on them. I think it's just a kudos to the performance of the kids that are playing on the field right now. Had these kids come in a year ago, we'd probably be watching all of them play. Because it'd be like, oh, well, we're not very good. Well, play the freshmen. They're talented. That's not the case anymore. Now they're well coached. Well, they're executing at a high level, and these freshmen are going to have to learn it. That's all. And they're really talented, though.
Facts. Coach D, thank you for the two. Run game success against Wisconsin for the blowout. That's his take, I assume, on the game.
I mean, that's going to be the key. When you talk about keys to victory, which we'll talk about later in the week, I think Ohio State's going to win pretty handedly, but I think we're going to learn some things, and that's one of the things we're going to learn. How is this run game going to be against by far the best front seven that Ohio State has played? Even if Wisconsin's average, they'll be the best front seven. Although Notre Dame had those two D tackles that I loved. So we'll see. We'll see what Ohio State can do in the run game this weekend. I think that's the key to victory and the key to the chase, right? The chase, they're chasing a national championship. The key in this game, and that's, we should make that a segment, Chris. What is the key to the chase in this game? Because there'll be a bunch of games that we assume and know they're going to win, but there's going to be a key in these games to develop and show that they're on the right path chasing that golden trophy. That's right behind me, right over there.
So good. I'll jot that down, and we'll make that segment for the future, especially when we talk about Ohio State games. The Rod Farber, thank you for the five. Just for Zach, take us through the 80-yard counter run by Percy against South Carolina in 2008. Who else takes that to the house?
No one. It's one of the most exceptional runs I've ever seen. I mean, literally, four guys in the open field after he comes off the counter. It was blocked to perfection. I mean, massive hole, nobody there. It was the first time. So, Chris, we used to motion Percy in the backfield and hand him off jet sweep, or we would run like the jet sweep read with him where the Tebow would read the defensive end, and if he closed, he would give it to Percy. And if he didn't close, Tebow would run zone up the middle. We ran both of those with Percy quite a bit. And South Carolina was the first time where we did that same motion. He went full speed like a sweep, put his foot in the ground, and ran counter back the other way. Oh, my God. Lethal play. It was blocked to perfection. The defense took the bait. And when he hit that crease, there was like three DBs right there. And he just hit a crease and split them, and they all like hit each other. It was, I mean, truly, you got to see his burst. It's probably my favorite play I've witnessed in college football history, except for the Michael Thomas catch against Alabama on the reverse.
Heard. I'll go watch that after the show. Kay Young, thank you for the two. How can Bill O'Brien scheme his receivers open?
He can't. Jermaine Burton jogs half the time. Like, scheme all you want. Unless they give great effort and run great routes, they're not going to get open. I don't give a fuck what Bill O'Brien does. Now, I'm not a huge fan of what he's done offensively yet, but this shit is on that. It's on Holloman, Wiggins, and the receivers. Point blank, that's what it's on. Any lack of success so far by Bama's offense is not on Bryce Young. It's certainly not on Jahmyr Gibbs. The offensive line, yeah, they could get better, but they haven't been atrocious. I think Texas was pretty good up front. The receivers have been the epic failure at Alabama thus far, but they're talented. There's still time.
You think there's more levels concepts you can do to kind of get guys open and be more friendly to Bryce to get them some easy access throws? Because it just feels like Ryan Day's passing portfolio is so much deeper than Bill O'Brien.
I mean, they do it already. They already do RPOs. They do things that should be easy throws to get guys the ball in space. They do it. There's other schemes out there, but it all comes down to receiver execution. I mean, I could give them 10 other schemes that I haven't seen them run that are great schemes and would help guys get open. But if it got the same effort that the schemes Bill O'Brien is using has gotten, they won't work either.
Heard. Well, all right, Zach, I got nothing else left for the day. That's all the super chats. I don't think I missed any, so we are A-okay. Anything else you want to touch before we hop on out of here?
That's it. I appreciate everybody. Go check out Patreon, Money Back Guarantee. If you don't like the film breakdowns, I'll send you your $20 back. Go check it out. I'm telling you, it'll enhance your level of understanding and enjoyment of college football. You will literally, I've gotten countless emails and messages about like, damn, I learned more from that 1 hour video than I've learned my whole life about football. And I'm not trying to pump my tires. I'm just trying to get you to go do it and see it. And you can watch the public ones and see what's behind there. So we got a massive one coming later tonight. We got a Georgia getting broken down tomorrow. We're going to try to do one every day, Monday through Friday. We're going to do at least, you know, 2 to 3 a week, hoping to push towards 5 a week. So you guys have all the content you could ever consume. So I appreciate everybody. Chris, I appreciate you. Menace out.